The state of Kerala that I come from in India is socially and economically better off than many other states in the country. There is poverty, but absolute misery that is less common. So this time when I went home and I saw this very shabbily dressed older woman with her equally miserable looking young daughter, pretty looking but very miserable. Maybe I would think she would be 20, 21. And then a 4-year-old girl. She was being carried by this older woman, just having nothing on her except her very filthy underpants. When I saw this sight, I was taken aback because I'm not used to seeing that where I live. This little child, filthy. Her hair was frazzled and her body so lean. She looked so starved. Many people turned around to look at them as they passed through the town because they obviously were outsiders. So I decided to pursue them. I went after them. I struck a conversation with them. And I offered to take them for lunch to the local restaurant. And I said, you know, at least they will have a meal today. By the way, as I led them to the restaurant, this young woman disappeared. And this whole story that I'm narrating before you, I never saw her again. I'm totally presuming this, and God forgive me if I'm making a very wrong presumption. I think they probably made their living by she selling herself. And so maybe two things were happening. Either she found a customer, or they thought that for the lunch that I was offering, I would ask for a favor. So I don't know why, I didn't see this. So this woman, this older woman and this kid, they followed me to the restaurant and I offered to buy them 3 lunches. And this lady said, well, you know what, I'll be honest with you, 2 lunches will do because this little kid, she can share the meal with us. I said, okay, well, here's an honest woman. Instead, she said that she had just had a surgery on her eye, if I could help her buy a pair of eyeglasses. So I asked her, well, what would that cost? She said, 1,000 rupees. And I was not prepared for that kind of generosity, but then I saw that rosary around her neck. Now, I'm in my jeans and shirt, so these guys don't know I'm a priest or anything of that sort. Forget about being a Christian. But I saw the rosary around her neck, and she swore and she pleaded with me that what she wanted the money was for a pair of eyeglasses. I opened my wallet and I gave her 500 rupees, half the cost of the glasses. Now you would have thought I opened heaven's doors for her. In the middle of the town square, she laid her dirty, filthy hands on my head, and she almost forced it down, and she's blessing me. She just blessed me. She blessed me in the name of Jesus. She invoked all the saints, and she blessed me, and she said, God, just bless you, and I'm saying, God, let this blessing go to my parents, you know? I mean, just somehow make sure that everything is all right. And then she asked me to bless her. And I don't know why I was embarrassed, because maybe all the town people were watching. And so I very quickly laid my hands on this woman's head and on the child, and I blessed them. And then I made a promise that she would use my money only to buy the eyeglasses. And then I turned around and I left. That night, I couldn't sleep, both because of my jet lag, but also because I couldn't get these people out of my mind. And there were questions in my mind. Where did that young woman disappear? I never saw her again. And why did she disappear? Did they actually take me for a ride? On the other hand, this older woman's blessing, I'm not joking, but that was the best blessing I've ever received. I dare say that I felt the blessing stronger than when the bishop laid his hands on me at my ordination. There was something electrifying about this woman's blessing. But I also asked myself, why did I feel embarrassed about blessing them back? Why didn't I take the time and just maybe sit down and pray with them or something like that? Could I have done more? I don't know. So that night, I think in my whole life, this is the most sincere prayer I've ever prayed. I said, God, if you are God, please rescue them from this misery. I don't know who these people are. I don't know what they mean to me, but please, please, God, rescue them from this misery. And I hope God has heard my prayer. I've never seen them in that town till I left India. I don't know where they are. I will return to the story in a little bit with you. But I want to basically talk about the scriptures and the context within which I share the story. Both the first reading and the gospel reading today are connected by the names of two towns, Zebulun and Naphtali. So, the reading from the book of Isaiah says, first the Lord degraded the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali. But in the end, he has glorified the seaward road, the land west of the Jordan, the district of the Gentiles. So the Lord has degraded. And then in the Gospel of Matthew, he says that Jesus begins his ministry in the region of Zebulun and Naphtali. Now the history of these places will tell us the significance of this detail that Matthew is providing, the names of these two towns. And the context is this. When the people of Israel entered the promised land, the whole region was divided into 12 regions based on the 12 tribes of Israel. So Zebulun is a tribe and they got the land of Zebulun, and Naphtali is another tribe that gets the land of Naphtali. So when Isaiah in today's reading says the Lord degraded the land of Zebulun and Naphtali, he was referring to the invasion by the Assyrians of the northern kingdom. The first two towns to be destroyed was the towns of Zebulun and Naphtali. And why is this detail important? It is important because Isaiah promises that these very regions that experienced anguish and darkness first, these very places will be the places which will once again experience joy and light. Now, Matthew picks up on this theme in today's gospel reading by suggesting that Jesus, 700 years later, begins his ministry in the land of Zebulun and Naphtali, the very first lands to be destroyed by the Assyrians. So we are not merely talking about symbolism here, but real, hardcore intervention of God in the lives of people. Zebulun and Naphtali are the places that experienced anguish and darkness in a real way, but in that real experience of anguish and darkness comes a very real God who intervenes in their lives and brings light to them. Jesus goes there first. As Matthew says, the people who sit in darkness, who are these people? People of Zebulun and Naphtali, have seen a great light. Immediately after this, Jesus goes by the Sea of Galilee and he has four people follow them: Peter, Andrew, James, and John. He called them, and they left, and they left, as if God was calling them. They did not know he was God, but as if God was calling them, they left their nets, they left their family, and they followed Jesus. And what does Jesus do? Go to the synagogues, preach, cure the ill, cure those who are ill of their illnesses and their diseases. Those who are in darkness have seen a great light. Jesus takes these four people and begins his ministry. So, 3 points. I'm not calling these practical implications, just 3 things for us to think about, okay? Now, Zebulun and Naphtali, those 2 names, I think they symbolize our lives. Even a superficial look at our lives reveals that our life is a kaleidoscope of anguish and joy, darkness and light, sin and salvation, good and evil. Isn't our life a mixture of all these things? On that day, Jesus did not enter into the region of Zebulun and Naphtali aimlessly. He was planning something. It was a thought out action. He goes to Zebulun and Naphtali because he wanted to enter into the lives of people. Just like that, when no one expected, God comes and calls Peter and Andrew and James and John. When they were just living their ordinary lives, they were not doing anything special, catching nets, mending their nets, catching fish, God comes. The transformation in their lives was real. Jesus changed their profession, their families, the very meaning of their lives. I guess what I'm trying to say is, God is real. When I look at my experience with that woman and child, for me, it was a powerful God experience. This experience was not about the money or the misery or the filth or poverty. It was about that blessing that woman offered me and that I offered her. This experience shows me how God comes in a very real way to us, sometimes very unexpectedly, in very unexpected ways. But God comes. God is real. As real God was for Peter, Andrew, James, and John, God is real in the world. That's the first thing I want to say. Second, Zebulun and Naphtali, the significance of these places is not just historical or geographical. Today, they represent the anguish and darkness present in the world. Be it in shanty towns, in oppressed and exploited families, in nursing homes, in juvenile centers, in abortion clinics, in refugee camps, in prisons, in the lives of addicts, in starving populations of the world, or in war-torn regions, my dear friends, there's much anguish and much darkness in today's world. Zebulun and Naphtali are not just places of the past. They are places of the present. You and I know how much anguish and darkness is there in the world. God is asking us to be a light for somebody. We cannot go on with our lives as if only we matter. We cannot go on with our lives as if our needs and our wants are the most important things. No. There's so much anguish, so much darkness, we don't have to go around looking for someone to help. It is there, but our lives must bring light, hope, comfort to someone in the world. Doesn't matter if it's in this town or in some other part of the world, our lives have got to be useful, meaningful for someone else. Jesus, the moment he finishes walking through Zebulun and Naphtali, chooses four people, and they accompany Jesus on his ministry. Today, Jesus is asking us, are we ready to accompany him as he goes about doing the things that he sent for, bringing hope and light and comfort to people? So make sure that your life is useful for someone in the world. Third, the blessing of this woman on my head and what I felt in my heart with that blessing tells me that even though sometimes I consider myself better off than other people, I don't hunger, I don't starve, I never go naked, I too need God's light. I too need God. It's not that the poor have nothing to offer me. I think that blessing this woman gave me was special because that was the only thing she could give me. She had nothing else. What else could she give me? Except to lay her hands on me and bless me. There's something special about receiving blessing from somebody who has nothing else to offer. Each one of us is also a Zebulun and a Naphtali. Each one of us also needs God. Each one of us also needs light. And sometimes the poor, those who are oppressed, those who are dispossessed, they have much to teach us. This woman, that day, was light for me. Normally, as a priest, I am called to give blessing. Here, this woman, not knowing I'm a priest, she blesses me. Thank God for that woman and her poverty. That poverty spoke to me. In that poverty, God came to me. In that poverty, God blessed me. The poor have much to teach us because we also need God. This is not a practical implication, something just to think about, reflect upon. So let me end then simply by saying that I think this Eucharist is special because just as Jesus came through to Zebulun and Naphtali and to Galilee, Jesus comes on this altar for us. We are the people in darkness who have seen a great light. We are the people who today in anguish who need God. And Jesus comes. He comes to shed his light on us, to give us hope and comfort. As we receive Jesus, as we touch his body, as we consume him, let us take this light. Let us take this light. Let someone this week experience the light of Christ because of each one of us. Let our lives, let our words, let our actions be the light to the nations. People of God said,